keep from crying.
Well, you know who had his ashes spread at home plate?
The dude that did the Go Cubs Go song. Yeah, wasn't his name Goodman?
Steve Goodman? Yeah, Steve Goodman.
You know what else he wrote?
He wrote the perfect country and western song, and then he sent it to either Waylon Jennings or one of those guys.
Well, a friend of mine named Steve Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song.
They read it, and they said, this is almost perfect, but you didn't mention anything about mama or prison.
Because he hadn't said anything at all about mama.
Or train.
Or train.
Or pickup trucks.
Or trucks.
So then Goodwin allegedly wrote the next verse, which was, it was raining the day my mama got out of prison.
The day my mom got out of prison.
Stocks, jocks, stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
We're live.
Steve Goodman, it's a... interesting name. S&P Futures, by the way. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Jim Waller on the board. Matt Byrne should be here in a second, and Jim will wander over to the other mic. S&P Futures up 29. They were down last night. NASDAQ Futures up 79 as a few tankers evidently are getting through the Gulf. So that's what the that's where that all is. However, I don't think the oil prices are down much. As a matter of fact, they're up 232 to 101.96. Brent's up to 115. RBOB 330, ouch on that. So not so much good there, but actually, Jimmy, I was at a, I don't know what they call these things. Nobody seems to have a wake or a funeral anymore. I don't quite understand all that, but anyway, a friend of mine from years ago passed, and his ex-wife put together a, I guess what you call it, a celebration of life, a party for everybody to get together yesterday. his bar on the south side, and some people haven't seen in a long time. It's amazing how many people you lost track of with COVID and everything. Anyway, it's a bad thing. But we went there, and a lot of Cub fans. But Steve Goodman, this guy was cremated. So Steve Goodman was also cremated, and he had his ashes were spread around home plate at Wrigley Field. Which means, hey, it's, you know, I guess that's kind of cool.
I guess.
Yeah, the only problem is that that's the year they decided to totally tear up the whole field, the infield and everything, and put all new drainage in and everything. They had the guy from the Sox come down there, the sod master. And, the drainage and everything really is a lot better than what it was, but poor Steve Goodman is now in a landfill.
Well, you don't know. I mean, how long do the ashes last? If it rains, this or that, he gets absorbed into the soil.
Well, all the soil is now in a landfill, so that's where he is.
Oh, well. Well, speaking of that, we have the game of the week, or the decade so far, that Duke-UConn game. The Boozer brothers kind of blew it. At the end of the game, Duke is up by two with 10 seconds. So, you know, UConn has to foul.
How did they get the last point?
Well, this is the thing. They're up by 10. They fouled the guy. He hit one and missed the other. And then Duke had the inbound. 10 seconds left. UConn full court press. Duke started to break it. One, two passes. Then Caden Boozer got it. Got double teamed. All he really had to do was try to break the double team because they had to foul him, and they would have been up 3 points. Instead, he tried to pass over the double team. The ball got tipped, went to the kid Mullins, who immediately took two steps. He was just past the decal at the half-court line and launched a three. It went in. They had 4/10 of a second left for Duke and had to try the Hail Mary.
You're going to have to let me talk for a bit. You got to go downstairs and get mad. Evidently, the buzzer doesn't work.
Okay. Well, we do have John.
Hey, gentlemen. We have John. This is your long-lost friend from Singapore.
Are you still in Singapore?
I'm still in Singapore, yeah. I would have seen you by now.
Well, it's stretched beyond 2 weeks, I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah. So, here for a month, cleaning things up and been I just realized, by the way, that all Americans, I think we have PTSD from what's going on. You leave the country, and it's almost a relief.
Yeah. I was talking to a couple people this weekend, and, Jen, once in a while you get a little flash, and we've been talking about Middle East. We've also been talking about the Fed. And you know what? I was driving down south to this funeral thing, and all of a sudden it sort of came together for me. I knew this seems shades of deja vu, right? You know, this reminds me exactly of the early stages of the Vietnam War.
Yep.
Where you had a stunningly incompetent people in Washington that refused to ever admit a mistake. It just kept pouring more and more people in to die. And you had a Fed that was stupid enough to finance it by printing money, which gave us all the inflation of the 70s and 80s. And the exact same thing is happening now. We got a guy that has no idea what he's doing. And every day it's an acceleration because the other side isn't doing what he wants them to do. And pretty soon we're going to have people getting killed over there, just like we were in Nam. Then it's going to get more and more on the other side. They did that, and now we got to try even harder. We have no business doing any of this stuff. None whatsoever. No. And then now the Fed is going to... last month wasn't even a war month, and the money supply is going to... We're going to see an inflation rate of 10-12%. We're going to see the market crash. It's exactly the same thing. How could these people not know history? It's exactly the same thing.
Well, I was just talking to somebody about Lyndon Johnson, and I think your listeners know I'm not a Trump fan, to be polite, you don't have to be a nice guy to be an effective president. And Lyndon Johnson was an individual. If you listen to some of his, because he used to tape everybody, his comments about the Vietnam War, because he felt he was trapped. He hated the military. He said they are lying sacks of shit, quote unquote. And they were, and also he couldn't do it because of the the Red Scare stuff.
Well, everybody puffs out their chest and. When we start losing, of course, they just got to keep pouring more and more into it. It was a World War II generation. It was, and the biggest splits in families. Can you imagine now, if we didn't have a volunteer army? If regular people's kids were going to go die in Kargil? I'm not saying people in the army aren't regular, but they're not. They're volunteer. Nobody cares about them. In any rich family, unless their kid might have gone to Air Force Academy or someplace, but they sure as hell didn't enlist.
Oh no, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, he may be enough of a street, street smart enough to know, to declare victory and leave. But then again, Israel wants this thing done. They want Iran bombed to the Stone Ages. I mean, and they have, because Iran has sponsored so much terrorism against them. But, I don't see a real good outcome right now. I don't see these mullahs backing down.
Well, you got rid of the guy who might have been the most moderate, and then you put his kid in charge and you killed half his family. So you're not going to get a whole lot of friendship out of this guy.
No. No.
But you mentioned Lyndon Johnson. I cannot find this anywhere, but I don't know. I've searched all my emails. I can't find it. Kathy Durbin used to help us with the show. She sent me this tape, and where Kathy used to find this stuff, I have no idea. It was a old tape, like you say, Lyndon Johnson taped everything. And he, one of his good old boy idiots from the South, called him, and Johnson was trying to get us out of the war, at one point, because he didn't think it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And this tape was chilling. Jan, it was Lyndon, it was with the Southern drawl. Lyndon, nobody likes a loser, man. Nobody likes a loser. If you pull out of there, you ain't gonna win. So the next day, he sent 25,000 more people there.
Well, Tom, you seem to both forget he did go on the campaign promise that he was not going to send his boys 10,000 miles away to fight someone else's war.
Well, yeah.
Which he did.
Which he did. But as soon as this guy told him, nobody likes a loser. So then our buddy, you remember Robert, guy from the Fed, John?
Yeah.
Well, Robert, absolutely. I was telling Robert this story. God, it was a long time ago before COVID. And he goes, I said something like, even if I make it to heaven, I want one day in hell to go punch Lyndon Johnson in the nose. He goes, I'll go with you. And I go, what do you mean? Why? And he goes, Robert was kind of an army brat. And whatever fort he was in, South, I was Fort Bragg or some one of those places. Yeah. Those were the guys. A lot of those guys were the ones that Johnson sent there. And a lot of them were Robert's friends, and a lot of them didn't come back. And he goes, that guy's an absolute piece of shit. We had no business sending those people. We knew they were going nowhere. And then we got into the body counts and all the other garbage.
Well, you know, this is the other thing, too, is, you know, when I hear, I have, you know, I think we all do. We all have a tremendous respect for our military. But when I hear these, you know, we've destroyed X number of, we've degraded this, that, and so forth. You know, so, and somebody will always leak. They'll go, no, we didn't.
Yeah.
No, we didn't. Yeah, that's bullshit. No, we didn't. You know, we have no idea where their missiles are. And I mean, and it's not like this is a nice group of people. They're not.
No, no.
They're not. But, you know, if they, you know, but it's amazing.
John, you can't fight everybody. I mean, some people you just outweigh. If you think their population doesn't like them, which they don't, well, the first thing was, we're going to blast this guy and everybody's going to revolt and everything will be fine. Well, that was a moronic thing to think, and it didn't work. And now what? The Israelis just say, keep bombing. There's 90 million people there. It's a huge country. We're not going to get to the point where, you know, and we sure as hell not going to invade a place 90 million people halfway around the world, are we? And meanwhile, the Russians and the Chinese are clucking. They think this is the greatest thing ever happened.
Oh, we have the Chinese have always been very. They just love the whole Ukraine fiasco.
Oh yeah,
or the Ukraine issue because it takes our eye off the Asia. You know, Japan seems to have done as good a job as any keeping Trump on side, but that's impossible. Now, as you know, I live with somebody who's a Trumper.
You told the prime minister?
I'm afraid to hear.
She was in the Oval Office, and evidently one of their complaints.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, about, you know, well, you guys didn't, you know, it was a surprise when you attacked Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
But, and if I hear one more progressive left wing, you know, what the algorithm feeds me now, talk about, you know, but three months ago, I think I made the mention that, oh, you know, if they mention we're past Pete Trump one more time, I'm gonna become a, I don't know, whatever. But now this is an unpopular war. Let me, from what I can tell, when Fox News says over 60% of the people think this is a mistake, then you know it's not popular.
Jen, Iran is a royal pain in the ass to a lot of people. But they're not our enemy in the sense that they're going to do anything to us. They're not like China or Russia.
That's right.
That we have to worry about. And I really do think from the news, I mean, I'm not privy to the meetings in the morning that Trump doesn't go to. But I thought the way we kind of kicked ass in Lebanon, and or Israelis for that matter, the Houthis and Hezbollah is pretty much dead. I mean, they've killed everybody in Gaza damn near. I mean, the Hamas. I thought Iran was about as weak as they've been in forever.
They have been. They were.
Yeah, and I just, you know, they're a pain in the ass. But Russia was a pain in the ass for a bazillion years, too. We outweighed them, right?
Yeah, well, Russia was Russia had how many? They had 10,000 missiles pointed at us.
Yeah.
For 60 years.
Yeah, I mean, somehow we...
I mean,
you know,
for a long time.
You can outweigh people. And that's the idea of being... There's all kinds of people around that don't like us. Trump has bombed 7 countries in 13 months. If he doesn't like them, he gets to bomb them? I mean, whoever thought that somebody like that
The American firsters, I have to tell you, these, you know, as you know, the right is splitting. They have, well, I have more time than you do. So, and so the America First, the real, you know, the ones that claim that they are the real America Firsters are beside themselves this. They are just beside themselves. And then, of course, it's really enjoyable to watch them go after Kaf Patel, who, you know, sorry, I think he's the most incompetent, corrupt guy we've ever had in that role.
J. Edgar was pretty bad.
So a lot of, what's that?
J. Edgar was pretty bad. We've had a few.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, well, that's right. You know, Kosh, you know, takes Jess to go see his girlfriend, the country western singer. J. Edgar took his Jess to go meet, you know, other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is...
well, Dan, what do you think? What are they saying over there in terms of this inflation stuff? Japan can't afford this oil. And the weird part is, in the Vietnam era, we were pretty much... We had some debt, but the debt was pretty much internal. Now we've got all this exterior debt, which means like 45% of our national debt is owned by people outside. It's a whole different game, and I don't think our guys understand it all somehow. And I mean, if Japan has a big problem because of this oil and other reasons, or if China puts the screws to them, they got more than a trillion dollars here, don't they? We're acting pretty high and mighty for somebody that owes everybody. I mean,
Tom, this is what, it depends on all these pundits that you listen to, but, you know, how we can survive the continuation of war after war after, I mean, how much did Iraq cost us? $1 trillion? At least?
I think the Gulf War I cost $1 trillion. We're still paying for people to have fake knees and fake legs and all kinds of stuff for that.
There you go. Yeah, and I wasn't even counting that. But we cannot afford this war. Well, I mean, this is not a war for national. I mean, we should be, Jesus Christ, we could have, what the America Firsters will say, they'll say, you know what? Our greatest ally that we're sending money to has free health care, and we don't. So why are we sending money to them? Now, he's talking about Israel.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's more complex than that, of course. But...
Well, Netanyahu's been asking, or whoever, they've been asking America to bomb Iran for 40 years, and every president said no, except this guy.
Yep.
But I don't understand. I mean, I guess I don't understand all this stuff, what's going on, but we've been pushing. People here have wanted Middle East oil since the day it was drilled, right?
I mean, what for? We have our own oil.
Well,
we have Venezuela's oil. What for?
If you're Trump's buddy who has the refineries on the Gulf, you want Venezuelan oil because that's what your refiners are set up to do. I mean, you're never going to get any of these people. That's why when you argue, discuss things with people, and they go, "What if you lower the corporate rate and taxes from 35 to 21, then nobody will cheat." Bullshit. Then it's your job. It's your job to get down to 5, and nobody else is paying to 21.
Right? Look, I have an idea. I want your opinion. You know what I thought about? You know, with all the, I mean, I benefit from tax deductions too. I lived overseas, so I was able to deduct quite a bit from my small companies there, which were unsuccessful. I would have much rather had to pay taxes on the revenue. But, you know, I thought, God, you know, the flat tax would probably bring us so much more money, period. No deductions, just a flat tax. I don't know. I just thought about that.
Well, but the problem is with that, you know, and I can kind of argue that one forever, is, matter of fact, I'll kick it up right now. I will do this because I don't want to just be somebody who, you know, talks off the top of his head, although I'm sure I do at some point. The problem with the flat tax is you can find it. I'll be cold on a Monday morning. You listen to the buffoons on TV, and they'll say, "Well, you just need a flat tax," because a lot of people don't pay any tax. Well, okay, what do you mean exactly by they don't pay any tax? Well, they don't pay any income tax. Well, okay, so be specific with what you say. They don't pay any federal income tax. Okay, now, with the U.S. federal tax revenue is $5.4 trillion, right? The payroll tax is 1.7. All right. The income tax is 2.8. The excise taxes are $110 million, all right? So, basically, your income tax, but now your state tax revenue is 2.89. So it's really more than the federal income tax. And your local tax revenue is 2.2. These are $1 trillion. So the income tax is really, what are we talking? We're talking 6.8. So we got 6.9, say 7 trillion of other taxes, and then there's 2.8 of income tax. So to say that if you don't pay income tax, to say you're not paying any taxes, is about as stone cold ignorant as you can get. Because it's not true.
Stone cold what now?
Stone cold ignorant. I mean, because absolutely not true. Here's the one, though. The corporate tax revenue is $473 billion. So out of the total, it's like 7% of corporate tax revenue. I mean, of U.S. tax revenue. And the way I look at it, they make all the money. So, now if they pay dividends, they got to pay a second tax, all that kind of stuff. I get that part, but it is really scary what you can, when you just twist words around. I mean, if you didn't own your house, if you used it as a rental, and somebody came by and shoveled the snow for you, if you paid them by check, and you paid them $1,500 for the year, say, if you gave them a 1099, that dude owes, on $1,500, he owes, $225. You know, because your Medicare, or your Medicare, your unemployment, and your Social Security. There's no cutoff on that. So,
yeah,
you know, that to say that the guy doesn't pay any income tax, he doesn't pay any tax, is insane. Plus, if he goes to the store and buys something, he's paying tax on that, right? If he lives someplace, he's paying tax on that. And oh, by the way, if he gets gas, he's paying tax on that. So to say people, we don't have, if we only had one tax thing at all, I mean, if we only had one person who you paid a tax bill to, then maybe a flat tax makes some sort of sense. But out of all of these, the only one that's somewhat progressive is the income tax. Because your sales tax isn't, right? Your unemployment tax isn't. None of that. They're all very regressive. The only one that's somewhat progressive is the income tax. So if you make that one essentially flat.
So this is, you know what? You know more than I do about it. Because I just did that. But from what I thought would happen is, it would simplify the federal income taxes. But you're right. We're actually, and as a country, we're highly taxed.
Yeah, and like five different levels.
When I
lived
in London, people laugh about the UK and how screwed up it is, all these things. But I will tell you, I found that we were higher taxed here than we were in the UK.
Sure we are.
Because they don't have... I mean, look, it's lifestyle equivalence, not one-for-one equivalence, but, you know, they don't have the car expenses that we would, because more people, and I'm talking London, more people take the tube. They have, they do have a higher tax, but they also have free health. I mean, health care is provided.
I think education
is more provided. If you want to get some Brits excited, talk about getting rid of the NHS. The most conservative Brit will lynch you.
Well, yeah, but it's all a question of what's included. But if you have, of course, it's funny when you say stuff on the air, and people, the reaction you get from people. I said something to the effect that this is when we first started the show. I said something effective like Phil Mickelson. So, Phil Mickelson wins, and Jimmy's going to argue with this. Phil Mickelson wins a tournament in California on New Year's Eve. The dude has to pay 13% there, He's paying, what, 39% federal. So he's up to 52. Not to mention, he probably has a house, he has a car, he has his sales tax. That's kind of a lot, don't you think? So what's his total tax? 60%? 65%? And healthcare is not included? Tuition is not included? What exactly is included? I mean, it's like, really? I mean, it's abominable, the amount of money you pay.
Of course, everybody wrote back.
I don't like Phil Mickelson. He's got enough money. What's the difference? Okay, fine.
Yeah, no, it's what about? Yeah. What about the fact he's a prick?
Yeah.
What about ism?
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to get off here soon, but I didn't want to completely disappear on you. But the thing I've noticed since I've been over here, and I have been swamped closing down companies and so forth. And I mean, for your listeners' benefit, I was here for 17 years and had some real highs and some lows. As we all do, but I do notice being away from the constant avalanche of information, left or right, or it's always in there. The exaggeration of see what the Democrats have done. They let out murderous rapists. What the Republicans have done. They have, you know, so forth and so on. So I made this comment to a pretty well traveled friend. I said, it's literally, as an American, it's like having PTSD.
Yeah.
It's like having PTSD.
Well, I don't know who the next president's going to be. I know this guy's going to, we're not going to want to leave, but say he does, whoever it is on either side. I hope in the inaugural address the guy says, guys, I'm going to be your president. He could be a she. I'm going to be your president. I have work to do all day. I'm not your focus. Go get a job. Don't stand there all day long waiting. I'm not your entertainment like this guy is. I'm going to do my job.
What do you really think about? Do you think he has cognitive decline?
Oh, he's in worse shape than Biden was. He's totally declining. Declining. And he wasn't that right to begin with.
Look, I've really got to get going here. But I just wanted to call and tell you I'm still alive.
All right. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
You do indeed.
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, Cap.
What's good. Up? What's a good word? You sound good?
Yeah, feel good.
Yeah, I was telling Jimmy on the way in, I ran into some Irish guys, Irish Southside dudes I used to play ball with. And the guy who passed, there was 1 year, it had to be, well, it was probably early, late, maybe 2000 something. We played in a fall league in Oak Lawn. If you're really hardcore softball, you play in a fall league because you don't get enough all summer, right? And usually the teams are really good. And that wasn't Oak Lawn, it was in LaGrange. These fields were gorgeous, and they were really well lit. And on Monday night, get a load of this, it was a doubleheader league. So you got there at 6:15. The game started at like 6:20. Chop, chop, chop. You played. You went right to the next field. Played the second game, and then you hustle over. We never missed. We already had the pitchers of beer and maybe even the chicken wings down before the pizza for Monday night football. It doesn't get any better for a Southside guy. Two softball games, head to the bar, and watch Monday Night Football. I mean, we're talking about heaven for 10 weeks or however many weeks it was. We would play two games on a Monday night and be off and have a good time. And we had a really good team. And fall leagues are notorious for having good teams because, like, the best players off several... You know, most people play all summer. It's good enough. But one team came out there was together, they have three or four guys from all the other teams, and they would win every year. Not this year. And the dude who passed played first base, and we ended up with a few guys from the trading floor, a few of my family members are pretty good ball players, and a couple other guys. And this guy used to deliver, and I knew him from the south side, but he delivered pop to all the clearing firms and everybody down here. There used to be all kinds of people on the trading floor, everybody had offices. And he would deliver, this guy'd get five cases of pop, this guy'd get 10. And he did that during the week, so everybody knew him. So he ended up on his team, and we had a guy from old Jan's nephew, Dr. J. Dr. J was a good shortstop. His nephew played left field, and Danny used to go out for the Twins every year and almost make the team. That's how good he was. We had a really good center fielder, and a guy named Mike Suarez played short center. That was a tackle on Illinois and a serious ball player, football, but then he lost a lot of weight. The guy could run like the wind. He was 6'5", 6'6". Talk about a monster in the middle of the infield. And we beat these guys. And they were so pissed off, and I was really pretty happy about it. You know, just saying. No, doesn't get any better, John. We ended up beating them in the playoff game, and it was, by the end of the game, it was sleet. And it was a happy fall, so I got to reminisce with a couple of those guys. And but, you know, it's always, funerals are bad things. I mean, always sad. But plus, nobody gets a funeral anymore. It's all, we're talking that earlier. I mean, everybody gets.
Yeah, we're too busy. You
know, we're too busy. I mean, was a John Wayne movie where the one guy died and the guy goes, "Well, he wasn't a good guy," and John Wayne said, "I don't care. Everybody gets to be read over." we don't even read over people anymore.
My dad always told the story. He wasn't there for his time, but his great grandfather died down in central Illinois, and my grandmother was just a kid at the time. You know, he had no religious affiliation whatsoever, and was buried at this, you know, little rural cemetery. And somebody said, somebody has to say something, and nobody had anything to say. And the grave digger, I think, was an old black guy, and he said some words over my great grandfather's body as he was lowered into the ground, and everybody felt really good after. So we needed something there. Somebody had to say something. That got somebody do what to say. So,
yeah, I mean, it's really, I don't know, it's a crazy deal, and we're kind of going down all these, you know, it's weird, John, all the stuff we discuss on the show, be it economics, even sports to a certain extent, it's all kind of the same way. Nobody seems to know what anybody's doing. We have no idea where we're going. We're just on our way, it appears. I mean, is that just an old guy grumping or what? I mean, does anybody have any idea what we're doing in this war? I mean, we started out doing something to try and help the revolution because they were killing their own people. That was the story. Now, it was never the Israelis' story. They just wanted us beating these guys up. Right? So they're willing to do the same thing there as they're doing in Gaza. Just keep pounding. But the only problem is it's too big for them to do, so they need us. And all of a sudden, well, guess what? They fought back. They're not supposed to do that. Okay, well, people do fight back if you start bombing them, especially if you kill their family, for God's sake. Now the thing is seemingly out of control, and all of a sudden we're going to start letting ground through. Does anybody think that we can have a occupying land force over in the Middle East, for God's sake, for years? What is that? What kind of drain is that going to be here?
Nobody wants that.
No, and yet that's kind of where we're heading, doesn't it seem?
Well, you know, the problem, and this is, you know, contrasted with Cuba or whatever the plans are for Cuba, but
you're assuming there is a plan, by the way.
Well, yes, and I know that, of course, there's a plan, and it's not just our planning involved here. The thing that, you know, Iran represents is something that was let spin out of control for practically 50 years, and nobody wanted to touch it. Everybody, you know, was angry about it, you know, back in the 70s, the late 70s. Everybody knew this would not improve, and the irony was this was a developed country by Western standards that had devolved into some kind of a, you know.
Well,
a
how did they get there? We did it in 54.
Right, and I'm not saying we weren't responsible for it. I'm just saying that after it solidified into what it became under the Ayatollahs, nobody wanted to touch it, and it became a kind of, you know, player on the grand stage, not through any, you know, particular skill or usefulness or, you know, any, you know, ability to get along with anybody else except our worst enemies. And we were responsible for then kind of like turning our back on it, except when we sold them weapons, you know, in the 80s, in Jeffrey Epstein's, you know, period of, you know, coming on the stage. And they were useful to us then because we wanted to fund what was going on in Nicaragua at the time. So, you know, we were to blame for a lot of the mismanagement of this and you know, played both sides of the fence pretty shamelessly. But it wasn't just us that, you know, made Iran possible as this kind of nightmare player on the international stage.
Well, they have money. Out, they have money, Jan, and anybody will sell to them.
Way out of proportion to its, you know, conception of its nationhood. I mean, it was horrible to its people. It was horrible to its enemies. So now we got a legacy, you know, pretty much entrenched for our lives to something that nobody has wanted to touch, and now we've touched it. And of course, now, you know, the bets are off for the moment as far as how this is going to play off, out. But this is was not something that was likely to end well, no matter what. And I'm just saying, I'm not in favor of what we did here. I wouldn't have gone in. I think we were too gullible, maybe with you know the force, you know, that Israel exercised in this. I can't, you know, rule that out certainly. And I don't think in other times with somebody other than Netanyahu and Israel that, you know, this wouldn't have turned out differently. But it was going to end badly, however it ended. And the tipping point, you know, is now here. And would I have liked to have seen it kicked down the road a little bit? Well, maybe. But that's the problem. It's been kicked down the road way too long.
Well, and now why did it have to be kicked at all? I mean, it hasn't really been kicked down the road. The
situation now with China, with what's going on in Europe, you know, and we got a war in Ukraine, and all these things have been, you know, spinning pretty much, against us, I would say, for the last 30 or 40 years, certainly with the Chinese. And everybody was okay with that. Nobody wanted to touch that either.
But what are you going to
do? Well, now we got a China that's, you know, in worse shape than they want people to know, and is tied up with Iran's future. And, you know, these are all economically, you know, grounded with each other. So this is something that wasn't just something we could just kick down the road the way we wanted to or had done in the past. Because now it's intertwined with things that are really, you know, heading to some other kind of conclusion.
Which, somehow, Jan, though, you have to...
And worst of all, us, Todd, because of our finances. So, I mean, this is not something that we... had there not been a war, we'd still be in a mess financially, certainly. And not just us. You know,
well, there's always people that are going to make money at this. I mean, Trump this weekend said, we want their oil. But why do we deserve... I mean, you know, there's always somebody that makes money on this stuff. And wars, and there's some people's kids die, and some people's makes money. Every war has been like that, but there's I don't know why whoever created the place, if there is somebody who did, there's always seems like there's going to be bad people, and you have to have somebody in charge, not that we ever really have that. Some people you just wait out. I guess we could have, instead of stopping World War II, we could have, as General Patton wanted to, just keep walking right into Russia.
Or stayed out of it completely.
Well, I don't think we could have stayed out of World War II too much. They declared war on us.
But let's just say we had. I mean, you know, it was impossible at the time to stay out of it, but there are lots of people who thought we should.
Well, a lot of people think a lot of things, but...
Yeah.
You could have kept going. You could have, since we had atomic bombs and nobody else... It, you know, sometimes when you look at it from the other people's side, it comes out different. Now, you know, I have zero love for the idea that, you know, people get a religion and take over a country and make everybody, you know, obey their religion, crazy or not, and then if not, you know, you become a criminal of the place. I mean, it's clearly not our bag. It's their bag. So there's never going to be a meeting of the minds in regards to governance between us and Iran. I mean, it's not going to happen. So, and they're going to try and push their stuff against other people. And I think you have to, in that case, you need to deflect it wherever you can, which we have done. We've certainly made it hard for them to do any kind of money transactions. So we put the screws to them pretty well, to the point where a lot of people over there want those guys out. Now, it's pretty hard. It's not like when we had a Revolutionary War. If you had a musket, you were equal to a soldier. Obviously, over there, you're not. But still, it's one of the... We outweighed Russia for 25 years, and that was a plan that worked pretty well. And, oh, by the way, we even negotiated with them. We had SALT I, SALT II, even though we knew that probably in the end of the game, some of those guys wanted to bury us. As Khrushchev pounded his shoe on the table and said, "We will bury you." So it's, I mean, you could, there's a deft touch to this. You don't just bomb everybody, for God's sake, because some people don't deserve it.
Well, we sometimes weren't dealing with the theocracy any of those years, other than the communist theocracy, which began to lose its steam in the 50s after Stalin. But it wasn't the same things that we faced with Iran at all.
Well, it's never the same. I didn't say it was the same, but my point is, I mean, we have an issue with China.
But we had every reason and every some reasonable success in negotiating with Russia, because they were very much like us. They were a Christian nation.
How many American lives in Vietnam were lost because Russia loved to support the place to screw us over?
Well, yeah, because we were doing the same thing in Afghanistan.
No, Russia was, well, that's right, but that was second.
But I mean, these were proxy wars where we, on the face of it, kept our nose clean. Russia kept its nose clean. The Chinese kept its nose
sort
clean,
of.
Somewhat. But all of these were, this didn't mean that we weren't at loggerheads with them, but we were able to negotiate at a table, whether it was arms limitations or nuclear testing, whatever. None of this stuff was off the table. And with Iran, it's been off the table, and we've just been content to push the table farther away for years.
The reason why we didn't do it is because it was a bad idea, and now one guy got talked into it.
Well, I guess the people who are for it would say it's an idea whose time has come.
There's nobody for it except somebody who believes that this guy has a plan. And I don't believe it, and less people are starting to believe it.
I would just take issue about the comment right before I came on about Trump's cognitive decline, and I think we've got to consider how we define cognitive decline when we talk about Joe Biden. So,
I think looking at the two of them, I mean, Biden, I mean, I'm no psychologist, so I really shouldn't even be talking about this, but in terms of not remembering stuff, in terms of acting like a buffoon, one is equally
Tom, not equal. Come
well,
on.
You, no, you, they're the people on the right.
Biden,
which you're
Biden
one,
didn't even sound like he knew he was Joe Biden. And look how little he exposed himself, Tom, for good reason.
Okay.
And look how much Trump exposes himself.
John, let me ask you this. I think some people, and I sure hope you're not in this category, no matter what happens, you're going to say that Biden was worse. And the guy will fall down and drool out of his mouth.
How could you not say he's worse?
Joe Biden, I think the capability... Joe Biden
I don't even think it was Joe Biden, Tom. I think it was a body double half. That's how bad I think
Biden it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I think to this day, if you put reports in front of the two of them, Joe Biden's much more capable of Trump and reading them and telling you what they said. To this day.
You couldn't even read, Tom. You couldn't follow a teleprompter.
Whatever.
Neither does Trump. He just goes off.
I was gonna say that as well.
But Trump talks extemporaneously. As long as they'll give him a microphone.
Okay, but he talks about...
Yes. Couldn't stumble his way through an English sentence.
The dude never... we're never going to get anywhere with this, but the point being is...
I'm just saying, Tom, you're like the media that covered for that bimbo all the years when he was hiding out in his basement or, walking off stage or whatever, crazy.
Here's the part that I
and everybody covered for him.
Here's the part that I don't understand about today's world. And it has to do with Trump and everybody. The guy gets on, he talks about all these former presidents didn't do anything in Iran until he did. Wasn't he a former president? Or did I miss that 4 years? I mean, he's talking about how incompetent all the other presidents were. He was one of them. But here's what I'm saying.
Impeachments and the most hostile media possible.
We had yesterday a discussion with some...
And Biden had the most glowing coverage time. Joe Scarborough says the best Biden we've ever
seen.
John, people were clearly cashing big checks.
I honestly don't care what Biden did. He's gone. He's gone. I can't do anything about Biden. And the part that I don't understand why.
Tom, this is the same reason that Biden was allowed to bamboozle the public day after day with everybody saying how perfectly coherent he was.
I never said he was perfectly coherent.
The guy is the other side of the coin now. Because
Johnny, it was obvious to everybody the guy shouldn't run again.
He shouldn't have been in there in the first place, Tom.
Okay, fine.
I don't think he was aware of what was going on.
Especially guys, you know, that I seriously respect their intent. Why can't people stay in the moment? I mean,
Tom, that isn't even passed to me with Biden's presidency. To which that presidency was hijacked.
Well, maybe we want another guy
who ran for cover as soon as he got out of office.
Maybe we need another.
The stuff they got away with, and the stuff we're stuck with because of that.
Okay, we had one guy who was falling asleep. We got another guy who's a madman who's bombed 7 countries in 13 months. Which would you rather have?
Well, Biden was unaccountable.
Okay,
and the people around him
were. How is it, and I'll say this bluntly, how is it that we've become sort of brainwashed and that we can't stay on topic? I mean, if I say to somebody,
I was just responding to what you said before I came out. Because I think that still, Tom, hasn't registered with enough people. Everybody would like Biden to go away because he was such an embarrassment.
But he is.
And I don't think we can dismiss it that easily.
Biden got elected because Trump was an idiot. Okay.
Because there were, like, how many 13 million votes that didn't get cast?
Oh, stop with that. The point is, I don't understand.
That's for another day.
The thing that I don't understand about all this stuff, maybe because I'm a traitor or whatever, I voted for Obama, okay, the first time through, even though I had misgivings because it seemed like everybody in front of him kind of fell apart. So I never put the CIA thing together, but it seemed kind of weird to me. So I voted for him anyway. But he didn't do a very good job, I didn't think. So I voted for, the guy from Utah. Romney, second time. I thought Romney would do a better job. I don't have any loyalty to Obama where I have to defend the guy. I mean, I voted for most of the guys. I voted for half Republicans, half Democrats, I think. But if Trump all of a sudden starts bombing a bunch of people, and I think it's wrong. Why do I feel like I have to roll with the guy? I don't. I thought Obama totally screwed up on Obamacare by not getting somebody from the other side of the aisle. I thought that was an amazingly foolish thing that would cost us going forward. And oh, by the way, he didn't address any costs, which I thought was crazy. So I didn't vote for him the second time. I didn't feel I owed it to him. I got to defend him to my life because I voted for him. It's not about me. It's about him. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, but I don't see why people have any sort of. They don't care about you. Why do you care about them? I mean, it's all about trying to pick the right person, but. Which we don't seem to get these days. But I don't understand, just in terms of the world, if you say, ah, man, I drove out to Audrey's and there was four idiots rolling down the the shoulder at 100 miles an hour and one guy almost clipped me at 130. The inevitable comment from somebody is, oh, man, you should see how it is in Miami. What's that got to do with the price of rice? Oh, it's way worse. Okay. I don't care. I want the guy on the shoulder arrested. I want the guy almost clipped me 100 miles an hour. Oh, no, it's worse someplace else. What about, the amount of money that somebody in Washington is stealing off these trades, off every announcement this guy has made, you can't mention it to somebody on the right without saying, well, what about Pelosi? What do you mean, what about Pelosi? Nobody ever accused her of trading at a 2 in the morning presidential announcement. Did she do pretty well knowing which way the economy is going to go over a bunch of years and make speaking engagements? Yeah, more than I would like. But has nothing to do with
what... And I think this is still true. Nobody seems to care what information she had or what she benefited from or what we'll never find out about any of these people.
You never saw... I'm going to say she never traded in the middle of the night and somebody changing an oil policy and did oil futures ahead of it.
Tom?
So in other words, we don't, because they were longer.
You give her the benefit of the doubt.
I don't.
Give to somebody else.
I don't. But I'm saying the fact that I saw this last week. I don't. Is Pelosi? As far as I'm concerned, she's dead. What's that? What does that have to do with anything?
Not dead enough.
Okay, fine. What about Pelosi?
I shouldn't say that, but I mean,
does that mean the person who did it last week is innocent?
Well, No, I'm just saying.
But everybody from the right that I've said that to,
of the people that we're putting aside,
every single person I've said that to, said it to me in a way that, no, you have no right to go after this guy because I think she was guilty too. I think we do have a right to go after this guy.
It always involves giving, you know, somebody a pass because that's in the past, or they wouldn't have done it that way. And look at what we've got now. I'm just saying
we've got absolute anarchy,
all equally crooked, and we just are selective.
They're not equally crooked.
Why not?
Every time, every iteration seems to get worse.
But they're, until they it gets worse, everybody I think is equally crooked.
And no, they're not.
The same grain.
That's like saying NIL money at five.
I don't put anybody in a protected category in any of this stuff. I'm just saying that once somebody does it, everybody does it, and you can see this all the way through every level.
I'm going to say that
it doesn't matter what party, it doesn't matter who's in office.
If you are in Congress and you find out, say right now, that all of a sudden it looks like we're going to start, if we had the dough, we'd be spending it a lot more on defense. So okay, if people in Congress are allowed to trade, which I don't think they should, and I don't think they used to be able to, but if they're allowed to trade, it wouldn't surprise me at all that congressional people have a portfolio weighted towards, you know, the defense industry, and maybe because of their inside knowledge, they're buying the right defense stocks. Do I think they should be doing that? No, but it's perfectly capable 6 months from now, where things could change and they could lose on that transaction. But it's not the same as, oh, we're going to put 90 bazillion barrels out of the strategic reserve and that announcement's coming tomorrow morning, and in the middle of the night, I short oil futures. It's not the same at all, John. Not even close. One is you think you made a pretty smart bet because you know more than the next guy over the next 6 months to a year to 2 years. One is, I'm going to make my money 20 minutes from now. It's a big difference. And I'm a trader. I know the difference. Just saying.
Well, I mean, would you care to hear about Silverado and George H.W. Bush? You know?
I know a lot about that.
About the timing of that.
Well, I knew more about that than most, Jack.
And the entire press industry, Tom, cooperated in killing that story until the day after the election.
Because, that firm was a CIA front. Well, Silverado.
You think any of this stuff isn't?
Well, I'm saying they were. How do you think Bush's kid?
I'm just saying, Tom. There has been exquisite timing for all this crooked stuff to maximize.
Silverado went under.
Right, but nobody knew about it until after the election.
Well, a lot of places.
You think that was by accident?
A lot of places went under. We had a client.
If people had known about it before the election, Tom, would Dukakis not have been so?
Now you're just saying, Tom.
That all of these things have been engineered in a way to show that
I'm just saying
forces to profit by timing.
I'm just saying when you see, like the other night, we were on the show, and all of a sudden the spoos ran up 150 points, and there was some announcement. Okay, I've never seen that before. But Silverado, by the way, we had one of our first clients. You would have loved to have met this guy. Boy, what an interesting duck. He was the second biggest developer in Arizona behind Keating. At one point, he had 57 companies doing different developments. But he saw the handwriting on the wall, and he got pretty much out beforehand. And so to the point where he got interviewed by the Wall Street Journal. But he was a straight dude, boy. I think I was the only semi-liberal person that was ever allowed in his house. Imagine that, huh? And, boy, what a house, too. And Audrey and I stayed in the guest house that had to be, like, 2,000 square feet. It was the guest house. It's pretty cool. But we had our own, God knows what we had there. I think we had our own workout facility. This is the guest house. Anyway, the dude, he gets interviewed by the Wall Street Journal. He goes, yeah, I saw the handwriting on the wall. This was crazy how this was working. Boy, his friends, he was they were ready to shoot him, saying that everybody saw this coming. But he knew the guys out there in the savings limit. Silverado, how would George Bush's kid just out of the blue end up? They were in Denver, weren't they?
Yeah.
How would a president's son's kid get out of a savings alone in a state the guy's never even been in except to ski.
Well, the same reason Hunter Biden got into Burisma.
The Bush family was...
And across, it doesn't matter what party. I'm not trying to defend, you know, Trump over anybody else. I'm saying they're all in the same boat and they were contaminated.
Well, they take it to new degrees. They take it to new degrees. Hunter Biden was a chump compared to Trump's kid. He was in terms of money, not even close. Maybe Trump's kid is smarter. I don't know, but every person seems to make it.
I'll tell you, they're cleaner.
No, they're Biden. Oh God, no! Oh, don't even start. Trump was a crook long before he had those kids.
Well, you think Biden wasn't okay?
Biden to me.
I'm just saying, Tim, don't. I can't like. Say any of these people are immune from criticism, but I don't say, "Oh my God!"
Here's the difference between you.
Has just started under Trump, and we never saw anything.
Here's the difference between you and me, Jen, and this. I'll tell you the difference. Maybe it's because I'm a son of a Southside Irish cop.
You're shocked.
If I see somebody blowing down the shoulder at 100 miles an hour, I'm just going to pull him over and give him a ticket. And by the way, if I can impound his car, I will. That's just me. I don't feel that. If somebody did it an hour ago and I missed him, that somehow this guy deserves a pass. I don't know where we got there. I just see what's in front of me and give the guy the ticket. I mean, if the guy says, gee, if you had looked an hour ago and there was a guy going 105, well, I'll get him next time. I don't get the somehow he gets to be let off if he can name somebody worse. I mean, where we started that, I have no idea, but I know it's a bad road.
Well, and do you see it changing anytime soon?
You know what? It's got me. You know what, Jen? To be honest, I don't. Well, for me, I mean, it's not like you and I are in a grave tomorrow. We're not. But you know what? If we go down in 25 years, I guess you and I, we care because, well, I have clients. You have family. But I look at my nephew's two daughters that are, you know, 3 and 7. I care about them. For me, you know, I had a nice run in this country. If the country decides they want to blow up, I guess I can't change it. But I don't want the young people and the people I care about to live like that. So I do care. And I don't want Biden as president. I don't want this guy as president. I want somebody that actually has a moral fiber. Comparing which one of these guys is worse... God, what a waste of an hour in the air.
I think we have to develop the moral fiber first before we start electing people.
Well, but somehow or another we're getting led. We need somebody to be in a spot and say, all right, guys, we're not cheating anymore. Congress, get your act together. Do your job. Don't trade all day. We need somebody to actually say it, John. Oh, by the way, the drug companies are stealing from everybody. You're going to stop. You either stop by yourselves in 3 months or... I mean, today I walk in. What's the first thing I see? This is a small. This isn't a pimple on the ass of an elephant. But who's the big Jimmy? Who's the huge guys that delivered all the restaurants? Cisco.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I go to this place. Place called the Restaurant Depot. It's a wholesale place for restaurateurs, especially guys that are smaller, can go there and buy their stuff and haul it themselves. They maybe don't have enough money to have an account at Cisco. A lot of these guys are paying cash. This morning, Cisco's buying the Restaurant Depot. There is no frigging reason for that to happen. None whatsoever. If you want to buy them, Jimmy wants to buy them, Matt Byrne wants to buy them, that's fine. Their biggest competitor has no business buying them. And yet, it'll fly through with this administration or any other. And what do they do, close them? Say there won't be a Restaurant Depot? I mean, the little stuff, Jack, we're becoming rotten to the core. And you're right. I mean, who is it? Who's the Solomon? Who's the Abraham Lincoln? We're going to stand up and say, guys, we're going to straighten this all out. We're going to stop spending this much money. We're going to stop bombing the hell out of everybody. We're going to get back in a state where we're going to have allies. And, oh, by the way, get a job. And, you know, all day long. Don't spend your day looking at me.
Traditionally, you know, look at this country's history. Anybody who has represented that kind of, you know, seismic shift gets assassinated.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. I'm just saying, this, you know, the track record for people who either have the vision or the ability to at least do some kind of, you know, stepping on the brakes or even a total reversal has always paid the ultimate price. And this is a so-called democracy, so
yeah.
or your representative republic. But we don't have a very good track record when it comes to sticking to our own guns about any of this stuff. And there were lots of people who wanted Lincoln dead, and lots of people who wanted Kennedy dead. And, you know, they got their wish in some form or another. And I'm just saying anybody who would come along and represent that same kind of seismic shift away from what we've
been inherited it shouldn't be that
here would be in office maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
You realize you just said to go back to being moral is a seismic shift? What indictment you just gave,
well,
Jack?
This reason why, you know, Jacques Barzun called his book From Dawn to Decadence. And he's you know, it's pretty hard to tell a decadent society away from as any way different from a prosperous society, because there's a lot of surface resemblances. But, you know, his contention is we've been in a state of decadence and progressively worse decadence for the last 1,500 years. So I'm just saying we can pretend it's, you know, not going in that direction, but it has been.
Well, you can't get to the point, and I say it a lot, and I think I'm right on this, and I think you would agree, but we know you like to disagree, and everybody does, which is fine. That's why we're here. I think the idea that we've reached the point, you somehow have to get back to the point where if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And we're there now. And I don't know why we're there. We're there because just being a straight person now doesn't get you anywhere in a lot of people's minds. And that's really a horrible place to be. And I think some of the European countries that we do nothing but bitch about and laugh about, I think some of the mentality over there is still the same. If you do what you're supposed to do, the world works out for you. Here, it doesn't look like it is. A straight person who just works at a job, there's no loyalty from the place. I mean, the places that have the most money own the newspapers. They own the press, which is not so good. You have all these people splintering around, and yeah, like Kevin says, if you want to get on people's YouTube or something and find the right people, maybe you'll find somebody. Or if you go to BBC or even Al Jazeera. But I went to Al Jazeera the other day, and you know, who knows what their story is, but I read an article about the Strait of Hormuz, and I learned more about the Strait of Hormuz from that article than I have in the last 3 years reading the garbage here, in terms of how wide it is, who has what side, who has the other. I mean, international law, and they were quoting all this stuff from the UN as who gets to do what, and it was amazingly informative. I haven't read an article like here yet. Did you know that the
well, you won't in any newspaper, certainly.
Well, I mean, don't go down the road that it's all owned by the same people on the same side. I'm talking about even on, if they're so liberal, why don't the liberal people talk about the actual international law? I haven't read it anywhere. Nobody's, even the wacky stuff I listen on YouTube. Do you know that every nation, according to international law, has a 12-mile limit? I think you knew that. I mean, I sort of knew that. Jimmy sort of knew that. But you still, you can't bother anybody inside your 12-mile limit if it's just regular commerce, unless there's a state of war, some kind of a war problem or a defense problem. Okay, so if there is no war, the entire Strait of Hormuz, it's only 21 miles wide. So the entire thing is either in Iran's territory or the guys on the other side. Who's on the other side? Is
Kuwait, Bahrain.
Yeah. No, there's somebody right across.
Pakistan is on some of it. The biggest border is Iran.
I'm talking about the width across, the narrowest point is 21 miles. And at that spot, both of the entire strait
it's
is...
UAE and Oman are on one
Oman,
side.
Oman, it's Oman. Right, so the narrowest point is Oman. So in that area, both countries, according to international law, which of course nobody pays attention to, that if either one of those sides feels that they're threatened or there's a defense issue, you can interject people on your 12-mile side. Which, you know, I didn't know any of this stuff. I'm not talking policy here. I'm just saying, for the first out of all the articles I've read, and there's been hundreds of them, the first time all this stuff was quoted was in an article from Al Jazeera. That's my only statement here. I'm not saying who's right, who's wrong, or whatever. But all the actual law I finally learned from those guys. Does anybody here, when they write an article, even look this stuff up, John? Or
who would publish it?
There's all kinds of guys writing stuff, getting published.
Yeah, but just because somebody wants to write it and there's a story to be told doesn't mean you'll find any organ with any circulation numbers of any seriousness.
Okay, so
accept it for publication.
So the Wall Street Journal had, but the Washington Post, the Tribune, writes an article about the straight woman. You're saying in the middle of the article, which they're gonna publish, they're not going to publish it if the guy says, here's the actual international law and quotes it?
I'm just saying there's no particular desire on the part of any of these, you know, press organizations to educate its readers.
Well, that's
certainly it's good to know that stuff, but it isn't. What kind of money is it? I mean,
you're right in the article anyway. You're going to the press conference.
Go on YouTube with it.
Okay, fine. You're going to
assuming they'll let you do it.
Jack, you're going to the press conference for the Fed. Why can't you ask a decent question? You're there anyway. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about.
I mean, it's not about. There's no importance placed on informing the public by any news organization.
Well, is it because they don't want to do it, or the public doesn't really want
to
be?
It's because they're controlled too.
Maybe
There's more in it for them to keep news away from people or important information. The less people know about the Straits of Hormuz, the better.
Well, I don't know whether people whether people don't want to read it or people don't want to write it. I honestly don't know.
Well, either way, they can't get at it. Is the thing. You know?
Well, yeah, you do. All you have to do is
get a burning curiosity about it. You'd have to go somewhere else.
Well, you could go.
And you got other things to do with your life.
You go to Al Jazeera, which I just did. But you wonder. I mean, I don't. But the thing that I'm seeing happening here, this is just like the beginning of Vietnam, just like it, in a sense that we've got undefined mission. We're going to spend a lot of money. We don't have the money. And oh, by the way, we're going to print the money, which is the same thing we did from 68 to 74, and it took us a decade to work our way out of it, if we ever really did. And now all of a sudden, we're going to start printing the money. And this guy's going to keep printing it. And Powell is going to do it. If he won't, I think the new guy is going to be more resistant to it than Powell, to be honest with you. I don't think Powell knows what he's doing. I don't think he even knows he's printing the money. But I've never been a fan of that guy. But plus, I don't understand why Trump doesn't like him. He's done exactly what Trump wanted him to do. But that's another issue. But now we're going to print all this dough. We're going to have a massive inflation. And if that happens, we're going to see stock prices reflect that and housing prices reflect that. I don't think we can handle it, Jen. I mean, I don't think. Am I the only person that sees this happening? I mean,
well, even if we could handle it, Tom, we've got so many other shoes about to drop, and you know, I'm just in the last half hour talking about what's happening in real estate, which has everything and nothing to do with what's going on in Iran.
It's all tied together.
We're going to have this issue if we didn't go to war, and we don't have a solution for it either. So,
well, but the real estate issue, if we're talking 9% 10-year rates, when I say that, it's not like I'm trying to be Chicken Little here. A very simple equation is that your actual rate of interest should be, and always has been up until lately when the Fed has gone crazy on it during COVID, it should be what the real interest rate is, which is really the cost of money. Okay, which is usually 2.5%, 3.5%, somewhere in there, depending on how good the economy. If the economy's doing good and people are competing for that money, there's a lot of projects. The real interest rate actually goes up, which is a good thing, by the way. It means that people are making money on stuff they're borrowing, but you have to add to it the inflation, because if I loan somebody $100 and I know $100 is only going to be worth 90 at the end of the year. I want the $10 to get me back to $100, right? And oh, by the way, I want the 3%. So if inflation is 10, your real rate is going to be 13, right? Or your market rate. And I don't know why people somehow have forgotten that. So if we get an inflation rate of even 5 or 6, which I think we're well past right now, and you add something to that, the cost of money, you're talking 7-8% now, John. And if it gets worse, what do you think these home prices look like at 7 or 8%? Or 9 or 10.
Well, Ed Dowd, you know, the guy who used to be at BlackRock, he was a portfolio manager there, and now he's, was it Finance, PHI, N-A-N-C-E, I think this is his company. But he had a video the other day talking about how, you know, with the war will, you know, speed up everything that was happening anyway. And the stuff that's happening anyway is the, you know, critical moment when the overvaluation of houses becomes apparent, and there's going to be a price drop, and there'll be an equities drop as well. And all these things were in the cards without the war. But with the war in there, of course, it just makes it likely it'll happen sooner rather than perhaps the date they might have, you know, come closer on the horizon. But the real estate problem, which is not just, you know, overvalued houses, but it's, you know, completely collapsed values of commercial stuff in the big cities, is something that has, you know, we haven't heard the first shoe drop in some ways, what that means. And we don't seem to have any kind of response to it other than to convert these into, you know, some sort of housing, you know, with, you know, public cooperation or tax breaks or whatever to get developers to come in and salvage these
things.
That's
going to be all BS.
Yeah, of course it's all BS, but this is the only plan they seem to have, and it's, you know, it's not something that can work across the board. It's not something that's going to even work locally, you know, in individual situations very well.
Well, Jan, we got 15 minutes, and we got to do the break because we didn't do it earlier. And Nancy will be on talking about the I hope she'll be on. We're talking about the you know, retail housing and so forth. But walk all of us through. I think from what I know from one of my clients, and since we were in there forever, and it's across the street, this 175 West Jackson building. Now, the history of this, and I'm sketchy on this, because we were in there, we probably moved over here 2003 or 4, something like that, maybe. And we were in that building for a while, and they decided, these other people bought the place, a bunch of diamond merchants in New York, allegedly. And it's the third biggest building in the city. It's a whole square block. It's, what do you think, Jan? 12 stories? 14? Something like that?
It's not, oh, it's bad. More than that.
I 16? It's, I mean, like, it's not like it's 40 or anything. Maybe.
No, but it's
20 maybe?
Yeah.
But it's big enough where it had two of those big open atriums. Otherwise, nobody would have had a window, right? So there's right. Atriums in the middle. So these guys come in, and they bought it. And it had a lot of Class B stuff. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, where they actually had a jail in the place. They had a trading floor there. It was the insurance exchange. Anybody in the insurance business was in the building, and well, back in the day. And they actually had a couple of floors, I think, were Social Security, which immediately our stupid government, whoever was in charge at the time, I don't even know the president, well, I'm sure he knew nothing about it, the president, they move over to the then-new Dirksen building, which was $30 a square foot, and they were paying like $3 in this place. I think they paid the $3 for another like 2 or 3 years, Jan, while they were occupying the high-end place. So talk about a waste of money there. Duh. Anyway, these guys come in. They spent $100 million on the place. The building is all this dark gray. Well, they sandblasted the place. Jan, it turned out the building was white. Nobody even knew that, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a terracotta, beautiful building.
Oh, beautiful building. And then they replaced a lot of the windows. They really replaced it, and they put domes over the what do you call those things?
Atriums. Light ports.
So they ended up saving a lot of energy there, and they put a whole new lobby, and they spent a fortune on the place. And they brought a lot of it up to Type A office space. Now there were still people on the trading floor, so they're renting it. They got some law firms in there. They're doing pretty good. And a lot of that's... Then they let the bar downstairs leave. As soon as that happened, you got to have a bar and restaurant in the place in the wintertime in Chicago, so people go downstairs and have breakfast if they want. Anyway, a lot of people left. The exchange is sort of closed. They're open, but they're shadowing them for themselves. So all of a sudden, this whole area is not so hot. And they kicked it to a new person for something like $235 million or something like that, John. And the note, I believe, was around $170 million. So time marches on, and now these guys are gagging with the COVID, and they say, guess what, bank? It's not a bank. It's a group of people, which you're going to explain. whoever the hell they are, I don't know what the names are, it's all yours. So now they're gagging on their loan, and they got it back to them. Here's the keys, it's yours. From what I understand, from one of my clients, 2-3 weeks ago, they punted it to somebody, now whether it was an auction or not, into the $30 million range.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you and I and Jimmy could have been in there with a $31 million bid if he would have got it, or if it's to somebody on the bank board, or, you know, that could be crooked too, right, John? I mean, but the fact is, it somehow changed hands at around 30. Now, walk us through, who are all these people? Who's got the bruise on their behind? Is it ever going to pop through? It seems like it's happening a lot for everybody to not say a word about it. Who are these people taking these massive hits? Is it, did they all just have Apple stock where they don't care, or what? I mean, how does that go down to that huge degradation, and nobody seems to have a... Is this part of this private equity that people are worried about at these banks? Well, what is it?
It was something nobody worried about for a long time, because it was, if you had some money, if you had access to credit, and you had a plan to upgrade a building that was, you know, showing its age. I think your insurance exchange is like 1912 or 1914 or something. I mean, it's, you know, well over 100 years old now. But if somebody had an idea for, you know, this is a vintage property, it's got a prestigious address, it means something in financial history in Chicago, it was well situated.
Yeah, it actually has two addresses, one on two different streets.
Yeah, Jackson and on Van Buren. So it's, and on Wells and on LaSalle too. So, but this is, you know, you could find some way of parlaying that into some grand renovation, and they did this, you know, twice in the last 30 years, I think, on that building. And always, you know, somebody else has come in with a whole new, you know, picture of the future and what this building could be, and upgrade it, and get, you know, build parking facilities and, you know, public spaces.
They actually put parking in the basement, too, one of the guys.
Yeah. I mean, and this is all part of keeping the building afloat as a magnet for tenants, because nobody wants to, you know, rent space in the building, even if it was once distinguished, if it's starting to fall apart and the toilets are backed up and everything else. So this was just smart management. And it was pretty hard to lose money on some of these properties, with no matter how big they were or how daunting they seemed or how much they had to be brought back from whatever precipice they were approaching. But that changed in, you know, 2020 completely. And I think the last sale of the insurance exchange was 2018, when it was like 200 some million, and nobody thought that what would happen would. And now the building is pretty much being given away for 30 million or whatever, and the lenders, to what extent they can, will write this off as a loss, because they were
$145 million. That's a loss.
Yeah, and yet you know, this is, it's not just this building too that's in that same predicament, which is the horrifying thing. It's that, you know, how many times over in just downtown Chicago, let alone, you know, other cities that are, you know maybe didn't peak as high as Chicago did at some point, but you got this glut of property that now is, well, what are you going to do with it? Well, there was a history in that part of the loop going back, you know, into the 70s and 80s, where the older buildings that were not becoming, you know, hot properties anymore for tenants, because they were, it was hard to carve out space, they were brick buildings, they're not like steel girder things. All those buildings along Van Buren Street, the Fisher Building, Monadnock Building, the old Connolly Building, all the way down. These buildings were architecturally significant, but they were definitely down on their heels. And I think the Monadnock is the only one that has office space now, and I don't even.
And then that's where my buddy Bill Murphy's been. They moved to West Loop.
Yeah, and that's you know, it's still a beautiful building. There's a lot of lawyers and, you know, some storefront businesses.
But if you lose your vibrancy, if you lose the nice bar and restaurant in the building, if you lose all that, nobody wants to be here. And somehow that's transformed over to the West Loop, which, you know, I think it's pretty obvious, John, but the advantage of having everybody to be able to get to the loop cheaply and easily is now considered a disadvantage, because you don't want the wrong people down here making trouble.
Right.
Which you can never, that's why whenever, all we talk about on the show, it's the same thing. You can't have trading where enough people are cheating to where the other people look at it and go, wait a minute, if I'm not cheating, I don't belong here. And you can't have a downtown area that's not vibrant, where people are worried about walking down the street, because all of a sudden, there's a certain equilibrium that if you're on one side or the other, I need to be downtown because that's where the action is, or I don't want to be downtown, that's where the problems are. Once you get over to number two, you got a problem.
Right. And I mean, if people sense, you know, any pedestrian knows there's safety in numbers. At least yeah. more people like you than the gangbangers who are looking for you as a victim.
Yep.
But I remember when the building at 525 West Monroe was built, this is back in the 80s, and Kent Muchin was the lead tenant, and they moved out of their loop space and took space over west of the river. And what was, you know, the presidential towers had been built, but not much else. Social Security had its headquarters over on Madison Street, but that was pretty far down. I mean, it was very undeveloped, had a very, you know,
it was Skid Row.
Berlin post World War II feel to it.
It was your auto shops. It was your union places. There was no way to get there. I mean, everybody had a park.
Right.
It's nowhere near as desirable from
somebody who developed that. Maybe whatever Kent Muchin has in, you know, store for its future, somebody sees this is the way to go, because it was just as reachable from, you know, what's now Ogilvie Station and Union Station as stuff on the other side of the river in the traditional loop had always yeah. been. So, that now has just become a, you know, a tsunami of property redevelopment west of the river, and not only just west of the river, but west of the expressway, and pushing all the way up to the United Center. And the same thing north of there, you know, along Grand Avenue.
Well, people,
they feel safer there walking around at lunchtime, or, you know, and there are restaurants, a lot of restaurants.
Well, I mean, everybody, if you were, it's going to sound sexist, but it's not, but if you were a young lady working in an office, in those days, you wanted to be able to get to work safely for 50 cents. Didn't want to have to drive. And oh, by the way, you could spend your lunchtime walking through Marshall Fields and having a good old time. I mean, it, now that whole...
We're sitting at First National Plaza yeah. on a nice summer day. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there was a certain vibrancy to things. But so I'm saying, you can't let things degrade to the point where... Now, if we still had, you know, more neighborhoods in the city... That I don't understand why the red line, we're going where we're going with the red line. There's all kinds of places.
Started on that.
Yeah, I mean it's but I mean right now if you were to come from my neighborhood, I mean if you want to take the brown line, I think you got to wait two or three trains in the morning from Armitage.
Oh no.
I've heard that.
No.
I'm talking
no.
about it at 8 o'clock. You don't take it at 8 o'clock.
I used to. I used to take the Brown Line for almost 11 years, more than 11 years. The Brown Line comes pretty quickly. It has both the purple and brown stop at Armitage.
Okay, maybe it's Fullerton, but people tell me that it's impossible to get on a train there.
Fullerton, it might be. I mean, some of the trains are very crowded, but you could wait 5 minutes in another train. Rarely do you get to a point... at 8 o'clock, 8:15, that you have to wait more than one or two trains.
But there are places that are less than service, shall we say. There's no reason why the Orange Line stops at Midway. The city goes another 5 miles, doesn't it, Jen?
Oh, south of it, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's no... There's, if you were to look
the
at...
The fact that only the Dan Ryan L was the only L line that extended south of 63rd Street for how many decades?
Yeah, I mean,
and now when they're extending it to Altville Gardens, I would love to see Altville Gardens.
Yeah, I mean, how many people down there are going to work?
But the red line isn't going to bring that. It's not going to.
Yeah, I'm not so sure you want that group downtown, but you know, but maybe you do. I don't know.
Well, I just don't think anybody's going to ride it. I mean, it isn't like they're white collar jobs as people are getting to.
No,
I mean,
did we stop development? Yeah, and I don't understand that. I mean. But, I mean, the idea that you can have, well, most places don't have as much of a, shall we say, an overhead staff. I mean, when I was at Pullman downtown, I mean, every person had a secretary or an assistant. You know, so in those, they were, you know, mostly ladies that took public transportation to work. I mean, one car and a family. But now we don't have as many of those people, I guess. And maybe, you know, I don't know what the story is, but whatever it is, you lose your vibrancy. You know, losing the exchanges was a huge deal. none of the mayors really understood that. They let Miami steal a lot of that stuff. And even downtown, I mean, the insurance exchange, and the amount of taxation that was put on the place where they had to raise rents. I mean, I told you a story. We're going to break here in a second. But the story about the CVS in the place?
Yeah.
I mean, CVS had a big footprint right on the corner of Jackson and Wells. And they must have had, I don't know how many prescriptions, but the place was mobbed. And, you know, lunchtime, you could go in there and buy, you know, yogurt or something if you wanted. So it was like a little food store, too. But really nice store. People in there were nice. And all of a sudden, one day, they're gone. They were gone over a weekend. How you pull all that stuff out of there? I have no idea. So the guy who ran the building had his locker right next to me at the club, or my club. It's not like it's a country club. And I said, Sean, what's going on with those guys? He goes, well, the rent was $17,500, and they were fine with that. But they had one of the leases, what do you call it, a lease, John, where they, as soon as the taxes and the water bills and that stuff go up,
gross.
It just grows. He goes, it got to the point where their additional stuff because of the taxes was like 15 or 16. It was as much as the rent. And they said to us, hey, we'll pay the 15 or 16, but you got to drop this rent. I mean, we're not paying you $32,000 a month. I mean, that's a little excessive. And if the building said, you know, up yours, and they said, up yours, and they left. Now, that's a big nut for a place, that kind of a tenant. Plus, it brings people in the building. Then the restaurant left. Okay, so now I used to have a building right next to the L tracks. That if I needed a prescription, I needed something, I walked downstairs, didn't have to leave the building. And, oh, by the way, I could have breakfast, lunch, or a beer after work. And I can't do any of that now. Well, I'm out of here. You know, right? I mean, it all follows the other, doesn't it?
Well, and it's now reached a point where, you know, as the tax revenues on these buildings have collapsed, as the tenant rolls have collapsed too, if they come back, they'll come back not as commercial properties. They'll come back as, you know, subsidized housing, mixed use, commercial, residential, whatever, but it won't yield the same tax revenue it once did.
How do you put subsidized housing, people with kids, in an area where there's no parks, there's no place even to walk your dog?
Well, it won't be families, then. That's the thing.
If the place was vibrant and it was New York and you had one of the buildings had really nice apartments for $5,000 a month for big executives, they don't have to go home, that I can understand. But low-cost housing, they're out of their mind.
No, and the problem there, too, is the buildings that were first converted to residential when nobody wanted to live downtown because it was, you know, at night it was a desert. There's nothing after the businesses shut down for the day. There's nobody on the sidewalks at all. The theaters closed one by one. There was very little.
John, we got to go to a quick break, and then we have Audrey. SP Futures up 53. NASDAQ Futures up 187. They were down last night, but thankfully we've turned around here. Maybe we can actually have an up day, for God's sake. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your bank's, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Tariffs. Tariffs. Can you believe it? It said tariffs. And I got to be before a court. Can you believe it? This is like men playing in women's sports. Transgender for everybody. I have a new one to add. Voter ID. The Democrats don't want to give us voter ID because they want to cheat.
All aboard!
Hello, I'm back with Stocks and Jocks. A little statement there from our Matt Byrne. SP Futures up 51. As they fuse up 170. Like I said, we were down about the same amount last night. Maybe the S&Ps weren't down 50, but the NASDAQ was down 180, and we spun that all the way around. Hopefully it means there's good news in the world. Stocks futures rises. Trump signals progress in U.S.-Iran war talks. Well, let's hope there are. We don't want to see anybody get killed. We're all for that over in Europe. Got the DAX bouncing 61, but they had a terrible last week. That's 0.3%. FTSE up 97. That's a whole percent. So they're getting the north side here pretty good. Kick around on 28.3. So generally, the upside over in Europe led by the FTSE. Asia, Nikkei down 1,400. They were down more. That's almost another 3%. Japan could be, I mean, Russia's probably the biggest winner so far. Japan could be one of the biggest losers. I mean, they've got nothing but problems fiscally over there. And if their oil prices to them, given the amount we'll talk in a second, how much the yen has gone down, oil is like $130 a barrel to those guys. So they're in trouble. Hang Seng down 201.8%. Shanghai up 9. Call that flat. Bonds down 7 basis points. First time interest rates have been down. They've been up almost every day. It's still 4.37 on the 10-year. The Bund 305, that's down 0.04. Japan 2.36, unchanged. Oil, even with all this good news this morning, supposedly, still up $1.36 on 101 here. Brent, I think this is as high as it's been, up $2. $114.69, that's kind of the world price. You know, ouch on that. Our Bob up another 5 cents, let's call it 330. So I don't think your gas prices are going down anytime soon. Gold up $68, 45.60. Finally, a bounce out of gold. It was 5,100. Silver up $1.50, 71.30. Foreign exchange, dollar near 10-month high. The euro is 114.84. When this whole mess started, it was like over 117. So that's pushing 2%. That's a lot. British pound 132, it was over 135. Again, start getting 2% moves in currency. That's a big number. Crypto, finally a little bit of a bounce today. Up 1,567.887. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs lose, Sox lose.
Yep, it's the same old story as it always ever was. It's currently 7:37 a.m. on March 30th, 2026. The current weather for Chicago, 54 at O'Hare and 53 at Midway. Clear skies today. Get this, high of 77 today. Low of 63 tonight. Going to feel like summer for a good part of the part of the day. We have over in sports, of course, the MLB. Let's go down to that. The Cubs lost to Nationals yesterday, 3-6. Cubs are against the Angels tonight. White Sox, though, lost against the Brewers yesterday, 7-9. They play Marlins tonight. Winners for the, let's go over to NCAA men's basketball. Yesterday, Michigan beat Tennessee 95-62. UConn won against Duke, a close game, 73-72. And, of course, with the NCAA women's basketball, UConn beat Notre Dame 72-52. And UCLA won against Duke 72-58. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Jimmy, are the Angels here or the Cubs flying out there?
I think they're flying out there.
I don't think the Angels want to come to Chicago in March.
No, but a lot of teams don't want to come to Chicago
March. Yeah, Chicago doesn't want to be here in March. We have Audrey. Audrey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you guys this morning?
Doing good.
Good morning, Audrey.
We're leading in. We're talking about commercial real estate and the downtown stuff, and John was walking us through, like, the insurance exchange. And John, the only thing we didn't... You have any idea who holds these mortgages? I mean, it used to be, you know, Continental or First National or somebody. These groups of people, are they the same people that that was in the news last week. It's out of the news. These equity places. Are they the people everybody's talking about that the banks are saying are having trouble?
Yeah, kind of the private credit stuff. I mean, yeah. I think it's pension funds, it's insurance companies, it's foreign government entities, it's labor unions. I mean, you name it. It's just it's a mishmash. For the size of the loans involved, you get a consortium of people together who have a predetermined share of the benefit and the risk.
Well, you or Audrey, or even Jimmy, who controls that? I mean, if I know somebody's buying the insurance exchange and they need a loan of $180 million, just say, for instance, who gathers together the group? Well, I'll call this pension fund, I'll call this union, I'll call somebody. Who's in charge? What do you call that guy
That's a broker. I mean, there's just like a mortgage broker or, in the residential setting. But these are people who build deals. They know people who are interested in investing in a market, in a part of the country, whatever, and what kind of return they're looking for. So they know the stuff, and they can, put these people together, and a group of them or their representatives kind of decide on this. And I was never involved in any of that in my corner of the real estate market. These deals were already fully agreed upon, and the paperwork was done, and everybody was just waiting to sign stuff before I ever saw any of it. And even if you read it, you couldn't tell exactly who was who, because there were partnerships, there were overlapping partnerships, there were shares divided up in the fine print that wouldn't really help you in identifying exactly who the parties in interest were. It was not considered worthy of public record, unlike in the old days where you got an institutional lender, a bank, or a bank acting with other banks in some kind of a partnership arrangement. But it's very, these deals became so large and the amounts so big that everybody wanted a piece of it too. And they couldn't fail to make some kind of money on it. So they were
I'd probably get 5 emails a day. I'm sure these guys are on the lower end of that. I'm not financing a billion. It's got to be, it'll be a Wendy's site in Tulsa, or it'll be a, somebody something, it might even be a Walmart in, Santa Fe or something. They want, are they trying to bundle the loan for those places? That's what these guys do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think. And I mean, it used to be, a lot of the, apartment buildings in Chicago were bond offerings, with individual investors who bought first mortgage bonds, secured by a first mortgage, a lot of the buildings along the lakefront were built this way.
Okay.
Everybody thought, boy, I could own, being a stockholder in IBM or something. Yeah, I got a piece of the building on St. James Place or on Lakeview West. All these things, had individual retail investors in the 20s who were, getting in there, throwing their money at it. Some of the buildings did pretty well. Some of them, of course, went belly up.
How come our grandparents didn't do that, leave us a building? All right, how come our parents didn't do that?
My dad's father did that at a couple buildings and made some money, then got out before things kind of got rough. And he took a bath himself in the real estate market when he went into home building and, paid a terrible price and really lost his, kind of not only his financial health, but his physical health too. And I was kind of a sad chapter in the family's history. But before then, things were good. And the average person with a few bucks could throw money at some real estate project and walk away with a nice return. So,
what's going on in the retail market? Interest rates have crept up a little. Has that hurt you guys, or just a little blip?
I think it's there was a big rush when it went under six. There was a slight pullback, but business is good. I have a new client. There were a couple of places we wanted to see, and they were working, and both of them were gone and under contract within 36 hours. So the spring market is heating up. And again, if you have a nice product, expect multiple offers, or if you're a buyer, expect some competition on them.
But how much of the the good news piece? It'll do stuff anywhere in the area, but kind of was localized. Not localized, but most of her stuff is in. Given 15 miles from Orland Park Center, how much of the continual, I use the term success, is that the area never got crazy in the first place, that the prices are somewhat, when they come on the market, are stuff people can handle. You guys never had that huge push to the upside where people were gagging on them, and the prices never really got out of hand in the first place. I guess what I'm saying, can you apply what you're seeing there to maybe, some other areas might be more boom and bust, or to the north side, or to the high price areas or something?
No, the southwest side has participated in the price rise. Oil had for several years in a row increased over 20% a year.
Wow, okay.
So that doesn't fit. We fit in with everybody else. Prices have risen greatly. It's not like the southwest side has lingered behind any kind of growth rate. We've been right there. So this whole pattern of price growth is just... It was more reasonably priced than, say, Naperville at the beginning.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
But the prices have escalated, and now, your probably average entry price is probably $350, $375 for something small. But I would say until you're getting in the fours, you're not going to get probably something you want.
Okay, because you remember you were saying a few years ago on the show that people were kind of fleeing Indiana, and you said that's kind of evened up too. I mean, there's not a whole lot of really cheap places anymore, are there? Everybody's kind of evened together.
Indiana has, especially in the collar counties where people want to live, Crown Point, St. John, all those there, Chesterton. It's a lovely place to live. I mean, I'd be more than happy to go live in Indiana. But that's more about Illinois politics than it is about the state itself. We have a lovely state. It's just being ruined by the politicians, and that's why most people are leaving. So wait till people get their tax bill this year. That'll be interesting. And I bet it comes out after the election. Well, anyway.
It's all part of the same thing.
Prices are very high, and condos that used to be 110 are now 180 to 2.25. So... The price effect is real, just about everywhere.
What in terms of the taxation, when you see, our building downtown, I'm going to say at the tippy top, John and Audrey and Jimmy, I think the tax bill might have been $240, $250. I never saw it, but I have my elves. But now we're 40-50% occupied, probably doing better than most of the buildings down here. Because they got a bar downstairs is playing, and they got a microwave thing on the roof. What do you suppose that's down to, John or Jimmy? Is it? Do they still send out the $240 bill, assuming that's what it was? And,
no.
And you end up appealing it down, or they acquiesced that the bill's now $150 or something? How does that even work?
You appeal because you don't have the cash flow on the building. If there's no cash flow to support the tax bill, the building's going to be offered at a tax sale. So county would rather keep it on the rolls, so that they will adjust the bill downward. Maybe it's half now. It could be half. And that's why everybody else's bill in the city of Chicago has gone up.
What would you guess the total take in the loop? The loop itself, where the L runs around, the real loop. What do you think it is compared to 20 years ago or 15 years ago? Do you think it's half, two-thirds are getting out of here? I don't think they're even getting two-thirds, are they?
You mean occupancy?
No, in terms of total tax bill that they get, total tax receipts.
Oh, there's so much gone. All you have to do is look at the shops on State Street.
Yeah.
Factor in the office building and the restaurants and the little stores that used to be there. Every time I go downtown, it looks worse and worse. It is just a ghost. All you see wandering around usually is a few tourists and the young kids going to school. I commented to a friend of mine who has an office right on Michigan Avenue. You rarely see somebody in a suit and tie and a briefcase going to work anymore.
Yeah, that's probably the truth. What was the genius? And I know New York is. New York's a big place, but what was the genius of putting all these schools downtown and hospitals when none of them pay any taxes? Northwestern owns half the damn city. They don't pay any taxes. What's the point of that?
Politics.
Well, I guess you like the fact that a million people work there, but
That's their endowment. These buildings were Some of them, you know, the land was acquired, you know, before the loop was what we would call the loop today. And, you know, a lot of schools had, you know, rental space downtown, like, but DePaul owned a building on East Lake Street for a long time. And then they bought Kimball Hall, the old piano studio, and, you know, offices at Jackson and Wabash, and that's where the law school is. And they expanded to the Finchley building next door. Then they bought the Goldblatt building. You know, now DePaul has got, you know, a pretty good hunk of real estate, as does the Schoolyard Institute and Robert Morris and Roosevelt. And
well, Robert Morris bought Sears. Who bought the Sears building? Somebody was that the dorm now?
The
old Sears building was across from Goldblatt's. Across.
Oh, the one south of the Goldblatt's building. Yeah, that's I think that's a consortium. It was Robert Morris and some other group of colleges, Roosevelt, maybe DePaul too, and they also built that big convention center south of there, you know, that same consortium of colleges on State Street. So that's really could become like an academic, you know, row in a way.
Well, I mean, I think one of the issues that I don't usually talk about with you guys is, I always torment Larissa and Russell with it. If I walked into one of their classes and I put up on the blackboard, which again, showing my age, nobody has a blackboard. Do you think any class even has a blackboard anymore?
No, they have whiteboards.
Whiteboards, yeah.
All right, well, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so if I wrote up there and I said, I put define profit, I think the class could argue for a week. How do you define profit these days?
Well, you first time.
Well, I mean, you know, profit is supposed to be, if everybody's paid the way they're supposed to be paid, competitively, and people own the place, it's the money that drops to the ownership, correct?
After you pay expenses.
After you pay expenses and you do all that stuff, I mean, that should be the leftover piece. And that's what gets taxed and all this other kind of stuff. But what if you have a place like Northwestern that's allegedly non-profit, but the people there get paid more than the dreams of avarice, and they just make sure they use up every dime and don't make it to the bottom line? Does that mean you don't pay taxes?
No, that should be stopped.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think they pay a water bill.
I bet they don't even pay money on their parking taxes on their parking garage. Yeah, I mean, which they rip people off.
They totally rip people off at. I mean, it's $50 to park there, for God's sake. I mean, what does profit mean at Commonwealth Edison? Do you think they care that much about a dividend? I mean, if you were to take the top 100 people at Commonwealth Edison and put a competitive, you know, what another company the same size is paying their people, what do you suppose they're getting paid? 40% more? 50? I mean, what are we talking here? I mean, how is that not profit? Just saying. I mean,
I've got a question for you. There was it still is a church, and I want to say probably off like Clark and Monroe. I can't remember the name, but it was a church originally, but the alley was a cow path back when Chicago was growing. So there's a cow path going past, which is like an old alley now. But there was a church in there, and I believe that that entire building had some kind of exemption. And I wonder if it still does. I can't the top has a spire on it. You can see it.
Yeah, the Chicago Temple built 77 West Washington.
Yes.
And that was, it was a congregational church back like in pre-Chicago fire days. And
yes,
the title of the property was under a reversionary clause that the land, as long as the land was used for religious celebration, religious purposes, very specific language, the title would continue undisturbed. But if they demolished and put up, you know, a Nordstrom's or something, all bets were off, the title would revert. So the owners of that building shrewdly, you know, built a 30-story office tower and put the chapel in the sky on top, which is the tallest spire in the world now, I think, still is.
But it's really a beautiful building.
Oh, it's a gorgeous building, but it's still used for religious purposes.
Don't take this as an insult, John, but every lawyer firm in the world is in there. It's right across the street from the Civic Center.
Oh, it's a distinguished address. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah. And you know, always had tenants in the
And it's property. A great story, too.
Yeah, and it's and other places like that, and, you know, the way real estate was sold, or the conditions under which it was sold, that would unwind title if you ever stopped using it for that purpose or something else. Even the Northwestern University properties are held in, you know, such a way that if you, it, that you can't serve or produce alcoholic beverages on them. And that goes for the old, you know, Continental Bank building.
Really?
Yeah. So if you have to go to the through the partition into the building east of that that Northwestern didn't own, but that had been developed along with the other property, if you wanted to have a drink of any kind, pretty arcane stuff. But it's how property was is.
Not that I have a client or anybody who might be like this, but up in Skokie, these guys have an office complex that has the synagogue and the deli that's all kosher in the place. Does that mean they don't pay taxes on the whole building?
It depends. I mean, it's possible. You have to check.
I learned something this morning from you guys.
Jerry Reinsdorf did for his house, Tom. Didn't he claim he was the church of something or other, you know, Reinsdorfology or something? I don't think he pays taxes because it's a religious operation.
The church or what's happening?
Don't quote me on this, but I've had that explained to me, and you know, I'd hate to see if it's true or not, but I suspect it is.
Well, what if I decide to become one of these online preacher sort of dudes? Does that mean that PTI can become a? Does that mean a whole building doesn't
absolutely.
Have to pay tax?
You would be surprised how many houses I come across that are tax free because they're claimed as religious dwellings.
Yeah,
you got to be kidding me.
No.
So what happens if somebody buys it?
And maybe daycares. And
well, then they lose the tax status unless they can prove that they're going to continue that function.
Right.
All right, let's make it this
Here's one for you, Stu, and John, you might probably know this, but in Wheaton, which was a very religious spot, especially in the 1800s, 1900s, it was so anti-alcohol that a lot of the houses had written in the deed that if you bought this house, you could never drink alcohol in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that actually occasionally will come up in a house that's been held a long time there. It's still written in the title. It's kind of interesting.
Right. And I mean, and of course, the racial restrictions and religious restrictions were rampant in Chicago, especially in the South Side, you know, after 1910 or 1920 or so, so that if you sold your family to somebody with Jewish blood or somebody with black blood, title would unravel.
Really? So wow.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court declared them unconstitutional in 1948, but even into the 1960s, my old employer, Chicago Title, would continue to show racial restrictions not because they were enforceable, but because you were entitled to know that as a purchaser, that you might be the odd one out if you weren't part of this, you know, discriminated against class, and you wouldn't want to walk into a trap and be blindsided by all of your neighbors trying to burn you out. But then the Civil Rights Act in 1964 prohibited even putting those things in a title policy anymore. But they did control ownership patterns and racial, you know, boundaries, you know, up until, you know, the 1950s, pretty much. And there are all sorts of crazy things. You could put anything in, you know, and homeowners associations are just as weird in some ways, where, you know, what color you can paint your house. And if you don't paint an agreed upon color, you're subject to fines or, you know, an equity action against you by your homeowners.
They come with the pitchforks.
Yeah, yeah.
everybody's got to have a pitchfork.
Reversions, you know, future interests in real estate, that was one of the most, you know, arcane but interesting classes. And, you know, how real estate titles were crafted to impose your will on generation after generation of property owners.
Well, how we mentioned, I mean, I'm all on the page of the war ends soon stuff. Everything goes back to, quote, normal in the straight, all this kind of stuff. Everybody's hoping for that. I'm very worried about the money supply over the last couple months. Hopefully that'll tone down. If it doesn't, if all of a sudden this becomes another, you know, Vietnam where we're there forever and we pour money in the system to pay for it, how susceptible is the retail housing market to 8.5% or 9% mortgages? Is it real susceptible? Is it a cause of a crash, just to slow down?
There would be no sales. It would be, well, what would happen is the same thing that happened in the 70s. It would slow down dramatically. The people would adjust. Probably prices would come down. probably at 9%, and life would go on, not at a breakneck thing, but it's the same thing that happened. I mean, when interest rates went to 9, 12, 16, 18%, the housing market still, I bought my first place at 16%. Financed down to 12, financed down to 9. So people adapt to any circumstances because you have to live somewhere.
Well, you know, somebody asked me the question.
Would it change everything dramatically? Of course it would. But on the other hand, that if people are going to stay, then your retail stores and construction companies are going to do well because then people are staying there and they're going to fix and expand.
Well, you know, somebody asked me this weekend, not you, since I sort of remember this stuff, what's the highest mortgage rate I remember? And I know our bridge loan got to 14.5, and I remember the 30-year got to about 12.5, which meant that the 8.5% bond that actually was traded at the Board of Trade traded for like 66, which means, you know, 12.5%. I didn't remember mortgages getting to 15-16%, but I guess they did, didn't they?
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And second mortgage, you know, seller financing too. The sky was the limit.
That was a big thing. You're right. Yeah.
So the mortgage rates were 4.5-5% higher than the 30-year bond. Doesn't that seem like a lot?
And yet, property still changed hands. You know.
Well, yeah, but at what price?
But you know, the housing prices were such then that it didn't kill the market. You would think it would.
Well, that's what
didn't.
I'm saying. I bought my house in Beverly. When I paid a 12.5% mortgage, I paid $130,000 for the place. It's got to be worth $800 now.
Well, but everything's relative, and people were making less then too. Right. It all went along.
Well, the most
is that house going back to $130,000? No,
I doubt it. Oh. But the most amazing, you know, this is something. That's why I, as you guys know, I'm way more nervous about the economy than most. Because a lot of stuff has been kind of wacky. I mean, if you were to take mortgages at 3%, which they were, and now let's say they're 6, you know, just for round numbers, you would never have guessed if you gave a freshman year in economics, if he would say the housing prices would be up, that's an F paper or a D. Yet they are. It's actually...
Well, they are because you've got... A whole so much pent up demand, even from COVID, where people were, you know, hiding in their basements forever, and you've got delayed generation coming out. Right now, your Gen Z is they're coming into the market big time now. So you've got a whole bunch of delayed people coming out, growing into the market, finally getting their jobs, and. Have accumulated enough money to get into a house. So the problem is that there still isn't enough, and people are not going to give up that 3% mortgage. There's no reason to, unless they have to.
The thing of it is, we got to dash here, but there's never going to be, quote, enough, because even the houses that are used to be 300 that are now 450, you can't duplicate them for 450 because the prices are so much higher than people are leading us to believe. There's no way.
Yeah, so that's why it's all going up.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you get these idiot politicians saying if we just built more houses, the prices would be lower. No, they wouldn't, because you can't build a house for what it's going for now.
Right? Well, they want to build like a little one-room apartment and think that people are going to be happy buying that. You know, in spite of what people are trying to do to our country, the American dream still is. You want your little house and a lot with a fence around it. And that's still home in most people's heads of some type is your own home, whether it's a condo in the sky or your single family somewhere. People still want home. It's still one of the most powerful words in the English language.
Well, yeah. Could be your old station wagon. Just remember what Tom Selleck said, Rod.
You're real old.
You can't drive your apartment, but you can live in your car, right?
Well, you know, that's a whole different subject. Then maybe you better buy a van.
Winnebago now.
Yeah, you better better at least get a van, huh? Oh, God. Anyway, guys, we got to dash. Let's hope the market stays up. Odd, good hearing you. I mean, Nance, next week. By the way, there's no show. Well, I'm wobbling on the show on Friday because we normally don't. But...
I say give everybody a day off.
Well, the problem is the labor numbers are coming out Friday.
I think everybody will still find that out without
we'll
you.
We'll find that out probably on Monday. Anyway, we'll probably want to have a show
Is
Friday.
Half day for the market time on Friday?
No, we're closed. Good Friday.
It's
the last bastion of the of all the Italians who used to work on the New York Stock Exchange. Where they didn't want to work on Good Friday. It's I'm stunned that we still get the day off, to be honest with you, but we do.
Plus, I still have to make my Easter baskets and color eggs yet.
Oh God! Tell me, Jan, how much? Nobody died from the old egg dye, and even I used to like coloring the old egg with the old eggs, but now it looks weird. Where it's all one color in a thing. It's nowhere near as.
Oh no! But there's different kinds coming back out. You could get like metallic colored eggs. They come with little gel packages. You could still mix colors. It's all very exciting.
Oh God!
Yeah. It's like doing your fingernails or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah! Then you got But I have my annual egg extravaganza coloring party every year and invite my friends over and we color eggs and drink wine. So,
right.
If you're old enough,
what do the eggs look like?
If you're old enough, Jan, what they used to call them, hard boiled eggs?
Oh.
What?
I don't know.
Bar chicken.
Oh.
You walked into a bar, they had hot dogs and hard boiled eggs. It was called bar chicken.
You are old.
Well, I used to head into some of those bars with the guys at janitors I used to drop off when I was like 17. But anyway, what's that? Those are bar chicken. It looks like hard-boiled eggs to me. They got the same thing. Oops. Bar chicken. Anyway, guys, have a good one. SP Futures up 50. NASDAQ Futures up 167. See, we're in a better mood.
Good Easter to everybody.
Yep.
Happy Easter.
John, we might hear you from me before then. If not, we'll give you out a shout. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's it. I'm done.